Welcome to SCOTUSCast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUSCast, Unseaworthiness and Punitive Damages Edition. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On June 24th, 2019, the Supreme Court decided Dutra Group v. Batterson, a case addressing whether a plaintiff may recover punitive damages on a claim of unseaworthiness. Christopher Batterton was injured while working on a vessel owned and operated by the Dutra Group. Batterton claimed the vessel was unseaworthy due to a missing safety feature and sued Dutra in federal district court for, among other things, punitive damages. Dutra argued that punitive damages are not available on claims of unseaworthiness, but the district court and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit rejected Dutra's argument. Because that ruling underscored a division among the circuit courts of appeals in the issue, the Supreme Court granted cert to resolve the split. By a vote of 6-3, the Supreme Court reversed the Ninth Circuit's judgment and remanded the case. Justice Alito delivered the opinion of the court, holding that a plaintiff may not recover punitive damages on a claim of unseaworthiness. Justice Alito's majority opinion was joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Thomas, Kagan, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh. Justice Ginsburg dissented, joined by Justices Breyer and Sotomayor. And now, to discuss the case, we have Don Haycraft, counsel at Liskow & Lewis.
So, the case really revolved around two Supreme Court decisions, one from 1990 and one from just a few years ago. The 1990 decision called Miles v. Apex, and in Miles v. Apex, a unanimous 9-0 Supreme Court, in an opinion written by Justice O'Connor, and as I said, unanimous, held that under the Jones Act, non-economic damages were not available to, in this case, the parent of a deceased seaman. And in the course of the opinion, Justice O'Connor waxed eloquently about how common law courts, here the Supreme Court sitting in admiralty, should look first to congressional enactments in the general area and be limited by those congressional enactments so that a common law admiralty court doesn't just have free rein to conceive of and expand on remedies when Congress has spoken. And so in Miles v. Apex, the remedies available to a seaman's family did not include non-economic losses. Post-1990, most admiralty lawyers, including yours truly, believed, and a lot of lower courts held over the ensuing decades, that Miles v. Apex was the signal from the court that when Congress has spoken in a particular area on damages and remedies, whether it be the Jones Act or the Death on the High Seas Act, or for that matter, the Longshore Act, that courts shouldn't just expand willy-nilly remedies to the maritime workers. And so what happened in Justice Alito's decision is he looked back at history and noted that there wasn't a history of punitive damages being awarded in unseaworthiness causes of action. That is, there was almost nothing, and even the one or two very ancient cases upon close examination show Justice Alito, and he explains it very carefully in his opinion, that there really wasn't a cause of action for punitive damages for unseaworthiness. And I'm just going to take a moment to explain what unseaworthiness is as opposed to negligence. Negligence, of course, is a fault-based cause of action. Unseaworthiness has evolved over the last half century into a strict liability cause of action. That is, a seaman can sue his employer for a defect or some equipment failure, some unseaworthy condition in the ship or the ship's equipment, even absent any negligence by the ship's crew or the ship owner. If the ship is unseaworthy, then the seaman can sue for unseaworthiness, and it's an absolute liability doctrine. And the question that arose after the Miles decision in 1990 was whether, even if the Jones Act negligence action did not have a punitive damages aspect to it, would the unseaworthiness action, which predates the passage of the Jones Act in 1920, would it allow punitive damages? And basically, over the last couple of decades, the answer generally in the lower courts was no. However, more recently, in the 2009 decision authored, and this is important, by Justice Clarence Thomas in a 5-4 decision, a very close case, in Atlantic Sounding v. Townsend, the court decided 5-4 that punitive damages could be awarded to a Jones Act seaman in his or her maintenance and cure action. Remind you, there are three causes of action: Jones Act negligence, general maritime law unseaworthiness, and then maintenance and cure, which also is rooted in the general maritime law and is an ancient common law doctrine in the maritime world. So when Justice Thomas wrote that 5-4 decision, court observers, maritime lawyers, and lower courts saw that as a signal that perhaps punitive damages were back on the table and that Miles v. Apex had now been delimited in Justice Thomas's decision. And so basically developed was a split in the circuits that then was resolved by the Dutra decision. That split developed starting in 2014 with the U.S. Fifth Circuit had an en banc decision, a 9-6 decision on this very question, with the nine judges saying that no, there is no history of punitive damages for unseaworthiness. We common law courts are not going to expand the remedies beyond what the Congress did in the Jones Act for negligence causes of action, and so no punitive damages. A very strong dissent was written by Judge Higginson here in the Fifth Circuit, and then a Washington Supreme Court decision followed what Judge Higginson had done in the Fifth Circuit and held that punitive damages were available to a Jones Act seaman bringing his case in state court, and that was then followed in the Ninth Circuit, first the Central District of California, and in the underlying case here, the Mr. Batterton's case against Dutra, the district court granted a motion to strike, denied the defendants Dutra's motion to strike the punitive damages count that Mr. Batterton had brought. That went up to the Ninth Circuit, which a 3-0 decision affirmed, and then that set up the conflict in the circuits between the Fifth and the Ninth Circuit, together with that Washington Supreme Court case, which is why the Supreme Court then granted a cert back in December of 2018, setting up the present case. So, as I said, Justice Alito used an historical approach. His opinion, I have to point out, being a devotee of the Fifth Circuit here as the best maritime circuit in the country, Justice Alito did a little shout-out to a concurring opinion in the Fifth Circuit case, the en banc Fifth Circuit case. That is, Judge Clement cited her concurrence twice in Justice Alito's opinion. Now, I want to dwell a bit on what I presume is the behind-the-scenes aspect of this 6-3 decision. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of maritime lawyers saw Justice Thomas's opinion in Atlantic Sounding v. Townsend as perhaps opening the door wide to the possibility of punitive damages for Jones Act seamen under the general maritime law. The maintenance and cure action is a common law, general maritime law action, and Justice Thomas explained that because punitive damages were given in maintenance and cure cases before the Jones Act was enacted in 1920, that historical reference meant that the Supreme Court, sitting as a common law court, could countenance that expansion of the remedies beyond what Congress did for the negligence action in the Jones Act. So sort of the watchers were waiting for what Justice Thomas would do, and he didn't write a separate decision. He joined Justice Alito's decision, and that clearly was the key vote to make this 6-3 decision, and with Justice Kagan joining the usual conservatives. But as I said, Justice Thomas was the wild card here, and I was certainly watching. I thought perhaps Justice Thomas would adhere to the 2009 majority opinion he wrote in the Atlantic Sounding case and would find a case for punitive damages for the unseaworthiness cause of action. Now, I want to say that this decision is very important for the maritime industry. Anybody who has seamen employees know that the tort exposure for seamen cases only is much greater when the seamen's lawyers can bring a punitive damages count on the unseaworthiness cause of action. And Justice Alito mentioned in his majority opinion that one of the goals of maritime law and the Supreme Court's jurisprudence is to promote uniformity and to maintain the vitality of American maritime commerce, maritime shipping business. He noted that a number of other nations, other shipping nations, that the U.S. stands apart from them in many instances of allowing punitive damages where those other countries don't. And so a decision to allow a seaman to bring punitive damages for an unseaworthiness action would be to the detriment of the American shipping business, comparatively speaking. I'll spend 1 minute or two on Justice Ginsburg's dissent contrasted with Justice Alito. Instead of looking to Miles v. Apex as the standard to adhere to, she looked to Justice Thomas's opinion in the Atlantic Sounding v. Townsend case and noted that there was a strong common law tradition of allowance of punitive damages, and that when the Congress passed the Jones Act in 1920, it was intended not to limit a seaman's remedies, but rather to expand the seaman's remedies. Heretofore, there had not been a negligence cause of action for a seaman until the Jones Act, and so she noted that, historically speaking, punitive damages should therefore be allowed since Congress in 1920 didn't specifically or explicitly or textually limit punitive damages.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.